Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. The New York State Senate votes no on gay marriage. Happiness upstate, depression on Fire Island. According to two different reports earlier this week, job losses are down for the eighth month in a row, though unemployment is now expected to hit 10.5% before it comes down. The president announced more troops to Afghanistan. Were you surprised? Really? On what planet do you spend the bulk of your time? A report came out that said civil rights enforcement dropped during the administration of George W. Bush. You all remember him? Okay. Undoubtedly, that's because no one violated any civil rights laws during that period. Sean Hannity bolsters our guess that the Tea Party will become a political party. Thanks, Sean, but I could have skipped the help. Comcast is buying NBC, and that's one network where you shouldn't expect to see a replay of the film Cable Guy. The president lights the national Christmas tree. Don't you feel better now? Come on. The White House, Christmas, government, religion. How can you not like that? A new study finds that there's no link between cell phones and brain tumors. The study, sponsored by AT&T, okay, just kidding. The old slogan for Exxon, which you may remember as Humble or Esso, if you're old enough. Their old slogan's becoming popular again. Come on, you older folks do remember that, right? Remember? Anyone? Remember Put a Tiger in Your Tank? Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That's me. All that, news of the weird, and two special guests, Charles Brownson and Rick Penn. We'll talk about art, art books, publishing on demand, fiction, and Afghanistan. I had another note that I couldn't read. That's because that time I did it in handwriting. Anyway, we'll cover all of that and many more things. But first, have you ever noticed how sometimes on radio or on television you'll see someone pick up a piece of paper or they'll sound like they're about to read and they'll say, I was going to read this commercial, but instead I'm going to talk from the heart. Then they proceed to read a scripted commercial. Okay. I am actually not looking at anything that I wrote. In fact, I do have a written scripted, call it a commercial if you'd like. Those of you who have listened to us before know that we, my wife and I, are Pet Lane Advisors. And I've invited you before to go to our website, petlane.com, petlane one word, .com/Bushman, B-U-S-H-M-A-N. Well, I'm urging you to do that again as well, but also, if you live in anywhere in the Phoenix metropolitan area, and I'll even extend that to Tucson and let's say Payson, if you live in anywhere in those areas, and for those of you who don't have no idea what I'm talking about, I apologize, but for those of you who live in that area, if you would like to have the opportunity to get some free things for your pet, dog, cat, bird, the company provides products for all of those pet animals. If you'd like an opportunity to get some of those free, give us a call. You can reach us in the Phoenix metro area at 480-628-9786. No, not now, but after the show and anytime during the next week, if you'd like to get some free things for your pet child, give us a call at that number, or you can contact us as well at petlane.com/Bushman. But in any event, you can reach us at 480-628-9786, and we'll tell you how that can be done, and all while having a lot of fun. Okay, end of that. Now let's talk about some of these stories while we're waiting for our first guest. Oh, and that reminds me, of course, if you would like to call in and talk about any of the things we've touched on tonight or in previous weeks or another subject entirely, as long as it has something to do with politics, jazz, think of something here, economics. We call the show Speaking of Everything, and we try to pretty much cover everything. But you can do anything here except quote the Bible or the Quran. But that aside, any subject is fair game, and you can reach us at area code 347-994-3796. Let's go ahead and talk about some of these subjects now, and I'll try to keep an eye on the switchboard so that we can go ahead and take your call if you should call, or, of course, when we welcome our guest. The New York State Senate, as I mentioned at the top of the show, has voted to deny the opportunity to same-sex couples to get married, and that will pretty much kill it for this legislative session in New York State. It could always be done later, but they have essentially said no. The governor of that state had indicated he wouldn't object, but the Senate didn't pass the law, so it's now academic. I will share with you, and we'll share later when the second guest joins us, that I'm not really sure how I feel about the president's announcement to with regard to Afghanistan, but it was one darn fine speech. I'm saying that not facetiously, it really was. Sean Hannity, of course, one of my great heroes, has been saying for a while now, but he's been saying it more frequently, that this country essentially needs a third party, a conservative party. You may recall, for both of you who were listening last week, that we mentioned that we thought that this convention that's coming up, called the First Tea Party Convention, was really going to result in the formation of a conservative party by the name of Tea Party. Since the conservatives have had some level of success, let's be honest here, in gathering people together talking about tea parties, thank goodness they're not talking about tea bagging parties anymore. That's a whole other situation. Anyway, they've been talking about these tea parties and having them and, you know, the conservative movement and questioning Obama's birthplace and all the rest of it. They have drawn crowds, never mind crowds of what or whom, but they have been gathering crowds. And I suggested last week that when they have this first Tea Party convention, to which they will draw a crowd, that they may decide or vote on the idea of creating a Tea Party as a political party like the Republicans or the well, not exactly like the Republicans or the Democrats, but that kind of political party. You saw a manifestation of what could happen in the congressional race in the state of New York. They called it District 23. It was in the news quite a bit, where a large group of conservative Republicans went into that state and supported the candidate of the conservative party rather than the candidate of the Republican party. Hannity is one of those people, and I have a friend who is conservative, yes, it is possible, who says, I'm not so much a Republican as a conservative. And a number of these people are saying there are a lot of bad Republicans, meaning not sufficiently conservative. So I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that you are soon going to see the creation of a national conservative party, which I'm betting they're going to call the Tea Party, perhaps the National Tea Party. That same friend who I mentioned this to earlier today said, well, that's how the Republicans started. Well, not quite, but the Republican Party did form because the people who formed it, who were essentially anti-slavery, were unsatisfied with the Whig Party, to which most of them belonged. And, of course, we don't have a Whig Party anymore in this country, although arguably the Republicans are in many ways like the Whigs were. Comcast buying NBC. This does have to pass through Justice Department approval. I don't think the Justice Department has denied the opportunity to any companies wanting to merge for a very long time. Certainly, I don't think it ever happened during the Bush administration. But it does have to pass through the Justice Department's antitrust folks. If the purchase by NBC and Universal Studios from GE would create too much of a concentration of media power, the Justice Department has the right to stop the merger, though they have to do so by going to court. And this screams for that, to be honest with you, but I don't think they'll do it. I think it'll pass through. But Comcast is a cable company, as many of you know, because you probably have Comcast in your area. We don't where we are. But Comcast is a major, major, major player. And they... if they buy NBC and Universal, then that risk is there that there will be a lot of a lot of concentrated power in the hands of one company. We have, the switchboard is telling me, we have somebody calling in, and I'm guessing, let's see if I can do this. There we go. Is it Charles?
It is indeed.
Okay, terrific. On the phone with us now, we are departing from our discussion of politics to talk about something more interesting. Charles Brownson is with us, and what he does in part, and I'll let him tell us more about it, but what he does in part is create artist books for galleries and collectors, and those books are now also becoming available on a website, and he's also publishing some trade books and has written a couple of novels. So welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here, too. Are you feeling okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Okay, great. Tell us first about what you've been doing, more about the books that you make for galleries and art collectors. What, give an example of what those would be like.
Well, I call them artist books. There's a good deal of controversy over what that sort of thing is, but basically it's a book made by an artist. There's nothing
okay.
more complicated than that. In my particular case, I wrote novels originally, and I began to feel that the visual dimension was missing, but at the same time, I didn't want to just illustrate the books. I wanted to have more of a bond between the visual part and the writing part. So since I had a good deal of background in bookmaking and all the other necessary skills, I decided to make my own books. So what I produce are basically handmade books illustrated by myself on my own paper, bound by myself, so forth. And other people do many different things, but that's what I do.
And now those books that you create, and by the way, you noticed I didn't do a joke about bookmaking when you use that phrase. But, but that'll be, I was going to say, that'll be $6 across the board, right? But anyway, going back to the books that you do make, those are essentially your art or your illustrations, and you indicate that you make those available or have traditionally made those available in art galleries.
Well, generally speaking, these are produced, either they're unique or they're produced in very small editions, of two or three. And that's the major venue of sales,
okay.
The gallery.
Right. Now, you also have a website. Let me mention what that is now. And even though most people don't speak Spanish, who are listening to this, the correct pronunciation is ocotilloarts.com.
Okay.
And for those of you who don't speak Spanish or can't spell in Spanish, think of it as Ocotillo, O-C-O-T-I-L-L-O-A-R-T-S.
My Garmin navigation device doesn't speak Spanish either.
There are a couple of streets here in this area, for those who don't know, that are called Ocotillo. There is one, for those of you who are somewhat familiar with the Phoenix metro area, there's one in Chandler, and there's one in Apache Junction, and there may be one somewhere else. But, if you say Ocotillo, they're not going to know what you're talking about. And you mentioned Garmin. That's a GPS device which helps somebody navigate and get around. That's funny. But now, what is it that people will find on ocotilloarts.com in terms of the books? Are those essentially the books that you have produced?
Yes, because these are limited editions, not very widely available, I thought I needed a way for people to read them and look at them, make them more common and accessible. So I put up digital versions on my website. Most of them are there in complete form, visuals as well as the text. There's one that's a little bit too long to do that with, unless I were to spend for more money to get to double the size of my website.
right.
Basically,
but
they're free. They
go
can
ahead.
Be downloaded.
Right, I understand. So if someone goes there, they can see it, and they can actually, if they have a color printer, of course, they can go to the website and actually see what it is you're talking about.
That's right, or they can, in fact, download the whole text and do what they like with it. I don't make any claims on that.
I understand. Is and in terms of that, by the way, just for reference's sake, that is for reference's sake, that is what do they call that? What's the licensing? Is this just not copyrighted, or is it copyrighted, or a commons license, or what?
It's copyrighted, but it's made freely available.
Okay.
It's the same kind of license that the computer people use for open software.
Okay, yeah, like a program that's based on Linux, but basically it's
that's
available for free download.
Right.
It's copyrighted. Okay. And I, by the way, I've just gone to the website, and just the website itself is really without even, I mean, it shows book covers, but just looking at the website, quite frankly, with the textured background and the little thumbnail covers, it's really, really very visually appealing.
You know, I think there's a general problem with those kinds of websites. As you pointed out, you can just see covers. But what you would really like to do is, well, of course, you'd like to turn the pages yourself and so forth, but at least you'd like to turn the book around or upside down or whatnot. So
yeah.
I'm working on some refinements that I think ought to make that a little more interesting.
Yeah, but it's really quite a nice website, and I assume you designed most of that yourself?
Yeah,
quite nice.
It goes way back. It's hand coded. It was back before the days of.
Oh.
Well,
I have actually created. I don't have that particular website up anymore, but I actually created a website years ago using hand coding of HTTP,
mm-hmm.
Not HTTP. HTML, and it wasn't really hard. But if you don't know what you're doing, and I didn't. It's somewhat more difficult. So the fact that you did that like that, as contrasted with a program that will actually do that for you, that's pretty remarkable. Now, besides making those available, and I noticed on the page, I've since gone off of it, there were also, outside the books you were describing, there's also, I think there was a science fiction book there, and there's another novel, too. So you have written these novels, and tell us what one of the novels is about.
Well, the longest books that I've the longest texts that I've turned into artist books are a street novel called The Expatriate, which is very simply described. There's an unexpected suicide, and this has a rippling effect that spreads out to ever wider and wider groups, and that's basically the story. What happens to all the people that this touches, and how it manages to get to them. The science fiction book.
Well, let me ask you about The Expatriate first, if I may.
Yeah.
When did you write that book?
I started about 4 years ago, and the first version I thought was unsatisfactory, so it's been revised a couple of times, and then it got tweaked and tinkered when it turned into an article book. So this is a project that's been in the works for 5 years, maybe.
Yeah, and was there something which generated that idea in terms of writing that novel?
Well, no. I generally begin with a vague sort of idea and take it from there. Something pops into my head that or a character or a scene or something like that.
And it just goes crazy after that.
It sort of spreads out.
I understand.
Somebody's calling.
I beg your pardon?
Somebody is insisting on calling on another phone. So it's ringing in the background.
Well, I'm actually kind of glad to hear that. I thought I had taken too many aspirin. Okay. And I didn't remember taking aspirin, so it was even worse. Anyway, you were about to tell us about the other book, I think you're making reference to the science fiction book.
That's a much older text in a way. It's a science fiction, it's a series of six science fiction novels that together chronicle the rise and fall of another planet, another civilization on another planet. Actually, it's an Earth society which, you know, moves to a newly discovered planet, or thinks it does. In point of fact, the whole thing is virtual. And the six novels follow a cycle. There's the move to the other planet, there's the development of its society and its politics, the corruption and decline of that, and then the cycle finishes and we're back to where we started again with the same old ruined society on a ruined world that we began with.
But it's a different ruined world.
No, actually,
right.
It's pretty much the same one. We're getting
older. Oh, okay.
But the trip was interesting.
Right, exactly. I was going to say, getting there is half the fun. And in terms of doing that, that you say that's a much older bit of, you're right,
well,
not a bit. I mean, six novels is a long.
Yeah, some years ago, before I started making artist books, one of the reasons why I stopped being interested in conventional publishing is I wanted to do something else. I wanted to do a really long book. And so I started this thing, and I've probably been through it a dozen times. And it's been probably 15 years I've been tinkering with it off and on. And just the last few years, it started to, you know, basically come together. You wouldn't think it would take that long, but it did. And so now it's pretty well set. There's a couple of the last two books need to be looked at again, but I'm turning it into an artist book little by little, where I'm just starting volume 3.
Well, that's great. When you finish as much as you're going to do on a book, or in this case, a series of books. By the way, I'm using the word series because, you know, I'm reluctant to call a six book series a sexology because it might be misunderstood. but when you do these and you get to the point where you believe you're finished, or it's sufficiently finished, because it could theoretically never be finished. I understand you're making it available on the website for people who want to download it free. But if someone wants a solid book, because you had mentioned something about publishing on demand, are your books available through outlets to purchase an actual book if someone starts to read it or starts to, in fact, download it and then say, boy, I'd really like to carry this around with me and so on.
Yeah.
Are the books available?
They're becoming so. I just started to investigate this because I thought I needed, as you pointed out, something in between the three copies available in galleries and the free download. The difficulty is that if you publish the book in its original graphic form, the cover price is a wee bit high. I've done one of these, and because of manufacturing costs, the cover price is $47. Well, that sounds like a lot, but, you know, if you look at what graphic novels sell for in the marketplace, if they're substantial books, they're $30, $35, $40.
Are they? Okay. But you're right, $47 does sound like a lot of money to pay for a book.
Well, you know, it's one thing.
I'm not saying it's too high. I'm just saying it does sound like, you know, exactly what you just said.
You know, if you're Chris Ware or somebody who everybody knows, you might spring for one of these things, but $47 is a little high for somebody you never heard of. I decided at the same time to make just the text available without the visual component. So this is, in effect, publishing it as a straight novel.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is helpful to you, but something just occurred to me for you because we're, you know, just two guys talking. But what occurred, and letting other people listen. By the way, if anyone wishes to call in, we frequently don't have any callers. But sometimes we do, and if anyone wants to call in and speak to Charles about any of these books or publishing and so on and so forth, the call-in number is 347-994-3796. I'm a very bad host. I seldom give the phone number. but the thing that occurred to me is a possibility, so as to reduce the publishing cost of the book and still get your books into the stores or available on the web and into people's hands while not eliminating the illustrations, is a possibility of a text-only book with an included CD that they could put on their computer and see the pictures and perhaps print them out. I don't know if that would work for you, but it occurred to me as a possibility.
It would, or we're getting into territory which is a little bit difficult to manage with a simple print-on-demand operation, but such things exist, and it certainly is possible. And I already do offer such a thing on the website.
Uh-huh. Right.
But that's not commercially distributed.
Understood.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
Yeah. It's as you know, the world of publishing has changed substantially.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, I'm in my late 50s. I don't know, about you. And by the way, don't I sound enormously younger? Anyway, but the thing is I remember, and I've been writing for years, I remember the time when if you thought you could write a book and you wrote a book, you would then attempt to get it to publishers or agents, and that was the only way you ever published, and that was basically it. And now, of course, there's so many options available. The only problem is getting the word out to people, and letting them know of the availability of the book or books.
The commercial publishing world is virtually inaccessible to
that's right. That's exactly right.
Themselves don't take anything that an agent doesn't supply. And it's
at
the point now where agents have agents.
That's probably true.
These people are so firewalled that
that's right.
Unless you have special contacts or resources in some way,
you're right.
It's pretty difficult.
It's impenetrable.
A few people that romance, for example, is a substantial part of the commercial market. So romance writers have a little easier time of it, but it's.
I'm sure they would disagree.
I imagine they would. Anyone who's published something would disagree.
That's right. In the minute we have left, let me ask you what's ahead for you. First off, let me mention your website again. As it would be pronounced by most people, Ocotillo Arts, Ocotillo Arts, all one word, .com. But what's coming up for you? What's ahead in terms of your writing and publishing?
Well, I'm going to continue with these artist book projects. I've got plenty of opportunities to do that ahead of me, and one of these books takes a year or so to produce, and so I'm looking forward to a lot of the available opportunities to do just what I want to.
Well, that's great. That's great. I wish you the best of luck. Thank you for appearing
with us. Okay.
And if we can be of any further help, of course, please let us know.
Okay.
And again, Ocotillo Arts is the website. Charles Brownson is the author. I hesitate to use the word author. Creator might be a better word. And
all
you've been with
things.
Us. Okay, author, creator, artist. Publisher, the whole, and chief cook and bottle washer.
Yeah, that's about it.
All right. Thanks again very, very much.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
You take care. Thank you. And now, if I don't mess up the system, we're going to have our second guest join us, and one right after the other. There's no waiting. Two telephones, no waiting. Rick, are you there?
You're getting popular out there, Jeff.
Yeah, right. Rick Penn, star of telephone and radio, is here with us. By the way, you have—I do remember correctly, right? You've previously been—I mean, as a caller—but you've previously been on the Lionel Show on Air America, right?
Yeah, I was. I'm a big fan of Lionel. I think he's one of the best things on radio, besides yourself.
I agree. Yeah.
And
get
and
the shovel, boy.
Yes. Isn't it Ocotillo?
It is. You didn't listen at the earlier part. We were talking about it.
I have to admit, I have to confess, I just tuned in a few moments ago. I had forgotten that I had promised to call you. I was online. I was looking at internet porn, and then I thought of you and decided to...
As you always do when you look at internet porn, yes.
Yeah,
as does everyone else, actually, yes.
Yeah, I have to admit, I missed the first part, but I heard the last minute or so of your conversation. And,
Charles.
I'm sorry I missed the first part. It sounded interesting.
Yeah, well, and the thing we were talking about initially was is the fact that most people who would want to go to the website, if you ask them to go to ocotilloarts.com, wouldn't know what to look at because most people don't speak Spanish or understand Spanish pronunciation. That's not a slam. It's just reality. So as a means of hoping to get people to the website, we wanted to pronounce it as an English-only speaker would pronounce it.
Well, having lived when I went to college, I lived in a dormitory that was Ocotillo. And,
oh, is that right?
Yeah. So you can imagine having just tuned into the show and I heard Acapillo, you know me well enough to know.
These people are idiots.
There you go.
No, I understand. No, I've had similar reactions when I hear Spanish mispronounced because I speak a little. There used to be a popularly used phrase before my time, I should add, during World War II, and it was referred to as GI French. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it referred to the fact that American GIs, most of whom had no language training, either before or during their period of service, would be in France for, you know, be obviously to fight. And they would say things like, parlez-vous anglais?
I used to.
Mademoiselle? Go ahead.
I think I used to work for that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. But that was a common occurrence, and now, of course, it refers to, you know, when they say GI, you know, and a language, it could be anything, but, you know, people will pick something up and start reading a language they don't speak, and obviously they're going to use the pronunciation of their native language, which, in the cases we're talking about, of course, is English.
Having married into a Hispanic family, tell you it's referred to as Spanglish.
Yeah, although I think Spanglish also includes something else, which, and you can tell me I'm wrong because I don't pretend to know for sure about this, but my impression is Spanglish is the kind of thing I heard today, actually, where someone is speaking Spanish fluently, and then they'll use a word that is obviously English. So they'll go on and say, necesito una documenta acerca de la weekend, you know, for example. My Spanish is obviously not that good, as anyone who speaks Spanish just noticed. But they'll use an English word. I always thought it was the mixture, not the mispronunciation. But obviously, you know more than I do.
But for those of us who don't speak Spanish and who only speak English, we're very impressed.
Yeah, really. Okay then. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you mentioned a moment ago, you mentioned, and I think I interrupted you, and I apologize, but you mentioned Lionel?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, because just a reference to a show you had appeared on, if anyone has listened to Lionel, you know, the reference was just to that with regard to you.
I see, I'm sorry, okay. And I also, let me take the opportunity, I want to apologize ahead of time if I start going into a coughing fit. I'm just getting over either a chest cold or pneumonia or some such, and I don't have a cough button on this side. So
oddly, there's not one here either. Yes. Well, as it happens, which is the name of a Canadian public radio show, I have to my left two throat lozenges, two cough drops. So you know, if the problem doesn't, I'll try to pass it through the phone. I don't know if it'll work. You know, the internet can do anything. What's that?
I said I could use one.
Yeah, no doubt. I invited Rick to join the show tonight because the other evening, the president did announce the Afghan plan/strategy. Of course, slashing may be part of what the soldiers do there, but the president, for anyone who's been on another planet, doesn't know, announced that we would be sending 30,000 more troops, U.S. troops, to Afghanistan, and that we would begin withdrawing our troops overall in July 2011. Since that speech, there's been some waffling. In fact, everybody was eating at the Waffling House. There's been some waffling regarding that pull-off date. Huh?
I said, you need a drum machine on this show.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, but there's been some discussion about, well, July of 2011 is a target date, and you know, if conditions require otherwise, we can change that. So there's been some, I guess you would call it intellectual flabbiness with regard to the pullout date. But that was the plan, and Rick could be described, as could I guess, at least generally, as a progressive Democrat who's been an Obama supporter. Would that be fair so far?
That would be fair. I am, in fact, I worked for the campaign, did some volunteer work for the campaign, which was, I hadn't done that since the first Clinton campaign. So I was very excited about his candidacy, and I remain excited about his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you watched the entire speech?
No, actually, firstly, when it began, I was in my car, and it has a radio, so fortunately I was able to listen to the bulk of it on the radio, and I didn't see it at all, but I heard most of it on the radio. Go ahead.
Okay. I watched most of it, about the last three quarters of it. I watched it on television, and as you know, he is just, irrespective of how you feel about his politics, he's an amazing speaker.
Absolutely.
He's a very, very inspiring speaker. And if you're already a fan of his and you share his politics, then you're almost undoubtedly inspired and elated after hearing him speak. And I find
you want to cheer, frankly.
Yeah, well, what's often the case, and it was, I think it was true of this speech, is that right in the immediate aftermath of hearing him speak and hearing this speech, your initial or my initial reaction was, yeah, that's great, that sounds terrific and right on and this is wonderful, and mm-hmm. then you kind of sleep on it a little bit,
right.
And then the next day you start to maybe analyze what he said and think a little bit more about what he said. And
have a little buyer's remorse.
A little bit.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I'm not really sure how I feel about this plan and
mm-hmm.
the direction that he's taking us in. It's not a surprise. I mean, he was very clear during the campaign about
mm-hmm.
what his intention was with respect to Afghanistan and Iraq, and he's certainly following through on that, but I'm just really not sure.
Right. During the campaign, when he said that, I was thinking, oh, God. And you've been working all day, so you may not have been hearing radio, talk radio during the day. And I'm not talking about the fascist talk radio. I'm talking about the, rational human being talk radio. But what you have just expressed is what's being expressed all over the country by everybody who's a Democrat, a liberal, whatever, and many Republicans. The people who are dyed-in-the-wool, they're very few, like extreme supporters of the plan, and there are a number of vocal opponents. Of course, if Obama got up and said, "Today's Thursday," there would be people who would say, "That son of a gun, how dare he say it's Thursday?" Doesn't it, But outside
right.
of those lunatics, all right. Just an enormous, enormous percentage of people were saying, I like Obama, but I'm really not sure, I don't know about the Afghanistan thing. And that's just been very prominent.
I tell you, I did hear...
It's also how I feel, too.
I did hear some radio. I listened to the... you ever listen to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur? He's been on...
Very rarely.
I was listening
yeah.
to his show from yesterday, and he had much the same opinion. I tell you what it really comes down to for me with Obama is that I still have, and this may come off as sounding naive, and maybe it is naive,
yeah.
but I trust him, and
Understood.
I trust his morality.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly trust his intellect, and
right.
he hasn't yet given me. It had been a long time since I could say that about a president.
Right, exactly.
With morality or intellect, it had been at least 8 years, if not longer. So while that may sound naive, he has not yet given me a reason to not hold that trust. So I'm willing at this. Not that my willingness to go along means a hill of beans one way or the other, but I'm willing to wait this out and see where this goes and see where he's going with it. Because, really, right. I'm just not sure.
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind from what you said. One is the trust issue and benefit of the doubt, and, you know, we'll see what happens. One of the things that early the founders of this country talked about is that we don't have plebiscites in the sense of a vote on every major issue or minor issues like the old New England town meetings. So when you vote for someone, you're voting for them for two reasons. One is you believe they represent your overall viewpoint, not necessarily on every single thing, but your overall viewpoint. And because you trust that when there is a time when there must be an exercise of conscience, they'll do the right thing.
It's funny you say that because we do have a plebiscite form of government in California, and we can see how that worked out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's not entirely true. They do have the initiative and the referendum. They also have recall, and there are a lot of states. As a matter of fact, just as a historical note, those all came into effect in a number of states in the early part of the 20th century. It was part of what was called the Progressive Movement. And so Progressive Movement, among other things, got them Schwarzenegger. But okay. but the fact is that when you're talking about the system in California, it's not really a plebiscite. It's just they have the capacity to bring things to a broad general vote.
I meant that in terms of the effect is essentially the same. They've crippled themselves.
Right.
Taken, I don't mean to get off subject, but they've taken their ability to basically generate revenue.
That was Proposition 13. Mm-hmm.
Right. Want the same services that they've always had, so they've basically voted themselves into bankruptcy with all of their referendums and propositions, and I think Arizona runs the same risk because I think they have a similar system of government.
That's correct. That's correct. Before you do that, there are several states that have that, and what generally happens, the idea behind it was you could have a popular movement, and of course everybody needs one, but you could have a popular movement that would have the effect of getting something to pass or be defeated despite the legislators, because the legislators would tend to be corrupted by money of contributors, you know, the fat cats. And so what happens with these initiative and referenda is that they, in essence, get determined to a large extent, not all the time, by who spends the most money anyway.
And the downside
doesn't. Yeah.
The downside is that frequently the population that you're talking about just ain't that smart.
Yeah, unfortunately that's true. A good example of that is the recent vote last year during the presidential election period when California, which you've picked on already and is my former state, when California voted on gay marriage. The way they worded the initiative, firstly, there were people who voted no when they meant yes, they wanted gay marriage. And
right.
it was worded in some fashion that it was confusing proposition. That does become a problem. But yeah, getting back to what you were saying about Obama and Afghanistan, one of the things that you have in an ideal situation is that the populace trusts the leader not so much because of what he does or doesn't do, but trusts him or her to go ahead and change their mind, be flexible, and put us in a better position if things don't work out quite the way you planned. And that's really what you were talking about, trusting the intellect of the president. Roosevelt is the most commonly referred to example. I'm referring to Franklin Roosevelt, because during the Depression, he was noted for saying, okay, let's try this program, and if it doesn't work, we'll try something else.
Yeah, it's interesting that I'm not disputing that, but I just saw the results of a poll today, in fact, that showed that, I know I'm going to screw up the wording of this, but showed that politicians retain a higher degree of popularity when they quote unquote stick to their guns as opposed
mm-hmm.
to when they vacillate
change their mind
on different issues. Right.
I'm sure that's true. And one of the reasons for that is what you said before, which is that most of the people who respond in polls, I'm sorry, are not that bright. And they would prefer someone who says something, sticks with it, and that's the way it is, right, wrong, or this is the way it is. Well, you know what? The thing I'm reminded of is and it's not directly applicable, but the saying came to mind, frankly, when I was having a conversation earlier today, that to every seemingly complicated, this is from Mencken, that to every seemingly complicated problem, there is an extraordinarily simple answer,
and
it's always
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I was just going to say, and the thing about, you know, a simple answer, stick to your guns and so on, yeah, is a perfect example of that. No, there are times when resoluteness, if you will, is appropriate, but there are also times when you just have to be flexible, particularly if you want to get something done and you're trying to achieve a goal. Achieving the goal is more important than the manner in which you do it to some degree.
There's two ways of looking at this, and that's why I think that maybe the wording of this poll is particularly relevant. You have a politician, like, for example, in Obama's case, who shows that kind of flexibility and
right.
can change if the situation warrants it. But then you also have, and I think that this is where they were going with in this poll, you have politicians like, for example, our own Charlie Crist, governor of Florida.
Florida.
Who, as you may know, is seeking a Senate seat.
Right.
And as part of his campaign recently, he's now stopped this because it came back at him. It blew up in his face. But he started going on about how the Obama plan wasn't working, and the stimulus
package,
stimulus is a bad idea, when in fact there's reams of video of Charlie Crist standing shoulder to shoulder
right.
with Barack Obama talking about how wonderful the stimulus is and about how it's going to do wonderful things for Florida. So
He got caught.
He's trying to he's facing some stiff opposition from the hard right, and as you know, in the
right.
primaries you have to play
sure.
to your base. And his idea of playing to his base was to just contradict what he said before and to now say that he's always been against the stimulus. And I think that's what they were going for in this poll, that politicians who do that and who
right.
shift according to which way the wind is blowing are doing themselves a disservice, when in fact if they would stick with their position, even if it may conflict with what their base may feel or with what the people being
right.
polled may feel, they may earn a little bit more respect than they would from the shifting of their positions. And I think that's
sure.
what they were going with.
Well, there's a difference between changing a policy because the policy isn't working, and changing your mind, as you point out, because you are dealing with opposition that might hurt you, just to go with the way the wind's blowing. And he does have a problem. By the way, one of the things that I was talking about in the earlier part of the show that some people didn't tune in early enough to hear, they shall remain nameless. But anyway. But one of the things I was talking about, which relates to what you're talking about with regard to Charlie Crist, and we are going all over the place here, is the fact that, not the fact, but my belief that you are very, very soon going to see the formation of a third political party. What's coming up...
Hope you're right.
Go ahead. Well, I do
right.
too. Yeah. Well, you're assuming I'm referring to a conservative political party, right?
I am,
in fact, yeah. And I can tell you what I think they're going to call it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
They're going to call it the Conservative Party.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, you're entitled.
Go ahead.
I think what we saw recently saw in the race in New York is
mm-hmm.
a microcosm and this may be wishful thinking on my part, but I think that may be a microcosm of what we may see on a national level. You're going to see a right wing, Sarah Palin led or Sarah Palin ish party that's going to siphon off a lot of votes from the Republican Party. They're going to split themselves right down the middle, and power to them.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. The only thing that would differ, and it's a very small item, is what they're going to call the party. And I will tell you why I thought what I thought. They announced the first convention of the they announced. Let me phrase it another way.
The Tea Party.
Yeah, they announced the first Tea Party convention, and depending on your emphasis, it's Tea Party or it's the Tea Party convention. I'm serious. Yeah, well, yeah, I mentioned that earlier as well. That you know, thank goodness they stopped using the phrase teabagger. But I'm quite serious. I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think they've been setting this up, and at least preliminarily. And now you've got your friend and mine, Sean Hannity, talking about how there's a need for a national conservative party in the country, and lots of not intelligent people, but lots of people have been saying that. And now they've got this convention coming up with featuring Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann, who's undoubtedly one of the sanest people in the Congress. And I think they're going to do it. I think when this happens and they have all those people there, they're going to say, we've been talking here on the stage and we've decided that this isn't just a rally. We talked about it being a convention, and with your support, we'll have some kind of nonsense like that. We're going to today announce the beginning of the National Tea Party, and they're going to run candidates all over the place, and they're going to do exactly, I think, what you said. They will win some seats in some places, but they're going to do exactly what you said. They're going to put up candidates in every senatorial race and in many congressional races to go after Republicans with the intention that they will ultimately either put the Republican Party out of business or take over the Republican Party.
And what they'll wind up doing is, and pardon the expression, but God willing, they will put more Democrats into office, just like they did
there
in New York. I think that seat in New York hadn't been occupied by a Democrat in over 100 years.
That's correct. Over a century. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And there you have it. I will send them a check.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is in the short term, they'll do exactly what you said, in my opinion.
Jeff, I'm sorry. I'll send them a check, but I'm going to put your name on it.
Okay, well, that's all right. Anyway, but I think in the short term, they'll do exactly what you suggested, which is they will end up splitting the Republican vote and putting Democrats in office. And I say, glory be to them. I think in the long run, they may have the effect they intend with regard to conservative voters. Now, I think the general trend in the country is not towards conservatism, but that's a different issue. I think they're going to end up either supplanting over a period of time, 20 years maybe, supplanting the Republican Party or taking it over.
I think that's a possibility, especially given that the Democratic Party, or the Democrat Party, if you prefer, is such a big tent that you'll see it expand even further. Unfortunately, we have these what are they called, blue dogs?
Yeah.
In the party, and
well, that's a whole other fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. Just follow the money.
Exactly.
And so you'll see the party expand in that direction. You'll see the Republican Party virtually disappear. It'll go the way of the Whig Party, and you'll see this Tea Party, this hard right wing nonsense, take over. And that's okay, because I don't think that's the way that this country is. I don't think that's the way this country is leaning.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. By the way, putting you on the spot, all right, here's a little historical trivia, all right? The first, yes, you can, and if you get it wrong, by the way, you can claim it's because you didn't remember because you've been sick. All right, just so you know. Do you know who the first candidate was of the Republican Party who ran for president? Who was the first Republican candidate for president?
Well, this is probably a trick question.
It is indeed.
Let me give this some thought for a second.
Now, it's not the same. I'm not asking who the first Republican president was.
Yeah, now, the first Republican president, if memory serves, was Abraham Lincoln.
That's correct.
Okay, that is correct. The first Republican candidate was obviously not Abraham Lincoln. Otherwise, it would be kind of a simple question, yes. Would it be a simple question, so it's a trick question. So I know it was not Lincoln.
While you're thinking, let me mention we've got about 4 minutes left in the show, so if anybody wants to call in, they'd better do it quickly. Go ahead.
Could it have been John C. Fremont?
You Google it. You Google it. And that laughter is as much of a confession as anything anybody could say.
It was so hard to draw that out. I'm a very slow typer.
Yeah.
typist is correct,
but that was so well done.
It was the famous explorer John C. Fremont in 1856.
That's correct.
I knew that, so you put me on the spot.
If you look away from your monitor for a minute, I will tell you that he had previously been governor of California.
Okay, well,
and there are a number of things in that state named after him, but he was the first candidate and he lost, as you know, to James Buchanan.
I just find it frightening that you knew that without Googling it.
Sorry, yeah, well, one of those things. By the way, for our massive number of listeners and for you, let me mention that there is a website called wikia.com, which was begun by the founder of Wikipedia.
I'm looking at Wiki Answers right now. Is that the same thing?
I think it's part of, I'm not sure, Frank. I don't think so, actually. But wikia.com, wikia.com, if you look at there's a section of it called Presidentialpedia, and I don't know if it's been edited since I wrote it, but I wrote the entry on John Kennedy.
Okay.
Yeah, because they had was what they call a stub, which was he was the 35th president and led us through the Cold War, and so I went ahead and filled it in. So if anyone's interested in reading that, there's nothing particularly brilliant about the writing. It really is just a recitation of facts. But if you're interested in that, there you go. Go ahead.
Is that part of Wikipedia, or is this a separate site?
No, separate site. Wikipedia is not only a nonprofit, but it's it doesn't bring in any money at all. He formed Wikia.com with the idea of making a profit, and there are several different sections within that, and so you can either participate in or create your own wiki or Wikia on different subjects, and it's moderately interesting if anyone wishes to go there. But
I will check it out.
Yeah, do indeed. Our guest is Rick Penn. Go ahead.
It sounds like we're just about out of time, so I guess I'm not going to get a chance to argue with you about astrology.
No, you're not.
We'll have to save that for another day.
That's right. And for those of you who were not with us last week, we had my lovely bride on as the guest who was talking about astrology with me, and she's frankly far more knowledgeable on the subject than I am, which wouldn't take much, but she really is knowledgeable. And, of course, Rick's point is that doesn't involve knowledge. Because it doesn't exist. And
we'll have that conversation another day.
All right. Well, because of how late it is where you are, I won't call you afterwards to say thank you, but thank you very much for joining us. We've got about a minute left. Thank you. And best of the fam. And I will let you go, and we'll talk on another occasion.
Thank you, Jeff. It was good talking.
Okay, thank you. It was great talking to you. I had a great time. Thank you. Bye-bye. For the rest of you, we have about a minute left, and I want to thank you for joining us. I want to invite you again to petlane.com/Bushman, and we didn't get a chance to do a number of things we were going to do because we had two terrific guests. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you are in business and not blogging, though you have a website, please go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And if you're in the Phoenix metro area and want to set up a potty or get together so you can get some free things for your pets and have a good time with other pet owners, please give us a call at 480-628-9786. You can do that immediately following this show, and local time anytime between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. With that said, thank you for joining us. You thrill us to death if you joined us next week, which would be December the 10th. Same bat time, same bat station, blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman. Thanks very much. Till next week.